This week, a bishop and two pawns. Or is that prawns? Anyway, welcome to Grassroots Plus, sponsored by Gusto Homes.
Gusto Homes have been innovating in the residential house building sector for over 25 years, with a focus on building clean energy homes in sustainable communities. Tonight's guest is a former BBC News and Sports producer, director, and media outreach, education outreach, even at Mousel FC. Good evening, Kevin Bishop. Hope you're well.
I'm well, thank you. Nice. Thank you for inviting me on.
You see, David, we've had to go back to God's own county. It must be all the 3 weeks since we had Phil Hiscock, who not quite. He does live in that next county that shall not be named, but we've gone back west again.
You have, and I know I have it on good authority. You haven't slept ever since our guest confirmed. So, yeah, you're excited. It's like Christmas Day all over again for you, isn't it today?
It is, and for the third year on the bounce, when we're down there, I shall attempt to find Maisel's ground.
Come and visit.
I've got to find it first. I've got to find it first.
Yeah, it's one of the challenges actually finding it.
Yeah, take some stones in your boot to fill the holes in for them, and then they can concrete it over.
But I failed it badly. Right, let's get the show on the road. With Dave's 7 day roundup beginning, because we've split it this time, with step five.
Two goals in the last 10 minutes were enough to complete Lincoln United's miserable end to the season and propel Skegness Town into the UCL North playoff final against the Loughborough Students, who saw off Melton Town. The Southern final will see Racing Club Warwick host Elston Park. Midland side Highgate needed a 12-goal margin from their last match of the season away to relegated Bewdley to reach the playoffs, and that's exactly what they achieved. A record crowd of 1,179 saw Helston beat Falmouth, a second defeat 2 days later for the F Troop, and then a Helston victory at Torpoint means step four derby day for our guests next season. As we suggested, the North Western Counties League title went to the wire, with Wythenshawe coming out on top on goal difference from their near neighbours, with Bury 3 points further back. In Essex, both the Vials finalists were beaten as Tilbury lifted the title, while up north, another of the giants of olden times, Bishop Auckland, will be playing step four football next time round.
And actually, all 16 step four, step five titles have now been won. So we know 16 teams that are actually going up. We probably did Marzell a bit of a disservice in that. Well, you did because you said it. Because they could end up playing step three next season, and then they won't have a local derby against Elston. But Kevin, one of the things that never ceases to amaze me, with everything that Cornwall's got going for it, how on earth is it such a hotbed of football? Over 1,000 supporters at a step five match. Okay, it was an important step five match. Helston are going to be playing step four. Falmouth could be joining them. And for what's supposed to be a rugby playing county, I don't think football's ever been as strong down in the Duchy.
I think it's extraordinary. You think about it that Helston, Falmouth, Truro, of course, and us really doing so well. And as you say, in a county where rugby is ingrained in the consciousness here. But football's always been part of life here. I mean, I grew up going to school here in Cornwall, and if I'm honest with you, rugby wasn't a big part of my life. And I think that local football hasn't really managed to stamp its self on the national scene. Plymouth Argyle, the nearest team of any note on the national scale, but no, it's as ingrained in the supporters here as it is elsewhere, I think.
It most certainly is. Right, David, a quick look at the bottom of step four, because how's it going to affect the UCL, really?
Grantham Town look to have completed yet another great escape. Two victories this week, leaving them well clear of the relegation places. Meanwhile, in the Midland Division, with one match left, Gresley Rovers and AFC Rushden and Diamonds occupy the relegation places, while at the other end, Anstey Nomads go into the last match of the season without just a single point behind the leaders, Spalding.
You've got to give credit to Anstey, David.
Yes, I mean, they've got, it looks like they're on for consecutive promotions, or they've pushed it as hard. If they don't go up, they've pushed it as hard as they can. Yeah, they've done really, really well, haven't they? They've always been a well-organized side. I suspect they'll probably have to hurry up their search for a ground a bit quicker, because I can't see their pitch at the current ground, sadly, holding up at the higher level.
No, I can't. From what I know at the likes of Mazel and the work that Nick's doing there, Anstey is light years behind that. So they will have to do, they'll probably have to end up ground sharing for a year, but we'll see where they end up. Right. Cornish Corner, Kevin, is, well, we pay homage every week to Lizard Argyle in Division 3 West of the St. Piran League. But last week's Cornish Corner was interrupted, David.
Yes, the star of last week's show, and well done to people that picked it up but thought it was a cow, actually turned out to be Mick's ringtone. It's the Lizard Lighthouse Foghorn. It was installed in 1878. The twin trumpets were last operating air horns when they were finally decommissioned in 1998. They're still in place, they still work, and the electronic rubbish that replaced them is nowhere near as good. It's, and as not, you heard, Mick's phone's pretty loud as well.
It is. So Cardinal sin last week, Kevin, forgot to put it on silent, and the old foghorn went off.
But one of my childhood memories is falling asleep listening to the St. Anthony's Lighthouse, which is the lizard, and listening to the foghorn, and then timing the interval between the
I
think 17 seconds from memory,
and it's that is amazing, because the wife and I always stop at the Holiday Cottage in the Lizard Lighthouse now, and inevitably you are counting the seconds, because inevitably it goes off. That is absolutely... See, David, I'm not unique in that one.
No, the sad thing is the good folks of the Lizard, though, every summer say, oh, flipping heck, the Newark Foghorn's on his way down, though. That's the problem.
That's cutting.
And he doesn't stop.
That is cutting. Right, this is Grassroots Plus... with Lord Pickerill and myself, Mick Bradley, with our super-duper special guest all the way from West Cornwall, Kevin Bishop. Right, guest question one, it says here, and founded, I think, 102 years ago, and they are the most westerly pyramid club in the country, and they really have shot to fame in the last 4 years. So Kevin's got lots to talk about, David.
Yes, most clubs rely on things like sponsorship and gate money and other ways of raising money. You've got your very own campsite. You've got a lot of ground improvements going on. Even in the past, had a visit from the Mighty Geordies. If Mick's got his dates right, what's happened in the last 98 years? And I guess you're looking forward to Saturday. You've got a massive game. If you can beat Bishop's Cleeve, and Cribs can make Lark Hall slip up for you, and you're into some playoffs.
Or through make Bristol Manor Farm slip off. Yeah, I mean, it's just unbelievable. It's a year has gone since we won the Western League, and that still is etching in our memory. You know, one of those days which just, you know, winning the league was just extraordinary. For a little village like Maslow, I mean, for those of you who've not been there, it is a tiny place. It is, you know, a little harbour with a few houses dotted around it, and up the road there's another little village and a football team. We have, as you say, I think I'm right in saying it's four promotions in the last 6 years. We've gone from a radius of playing teams not much further than 25, 30 miles away on a regular basis to now playing regularly teams in the Birmingham area and Southampton, you know, Bashley, Evesham, Wimborne, teams like that. So, yeah, it's been extraordinary and a real exciting journey, a struggle. You know, we it's not easy. We have a campsite that, you know, supplies a lot of our income and that does well, but it's still reliant on the weather, and the weather we've had in the last few months has meant that this winter season has been bad. You know, we've not had a lot of people staying, and so the income's gone down. Where we are is quite remote. We don't get a lot of passing trade, so our ticket sales aren't great. We don't get a huge crowd. I mean, if we get over 250, we're happy. So yeah, we're always looking for sources of income. But on the pitch, we're doing so well, and we play a very attractive form of football. It's a pleasure to watch. And it's a great thing to be part of. I'm loving it. I've been there 3 years now. I do the media for the team, so I make videos. And it's. I used to work for the BBC, and I used to travel the world and do all sorts of stuff. And I'm probably enjoying this more than anything else I've ever done in my life, actually, when it comes to media coverage.
So, football or pyramid football in this day and age, generally, not wholly, but generally, success is measured against who your chairman is and the money that he's bringing in. So what you're telling us, Marzell's not really at the whim of one man who's going to be there today and probably not there tomorrow. It is pretty much self-sustainable on the back of sponsorship and this campsite.
I'd say that we have been up until now, and you know, I'm not going to disclose, you know, the exact details of our bank balance, but you know, we are not rolling in money. That's, you know, it's absolutely not a team that is got a huge amount of money to spare. But yeah, we have managed to survive without somebody taking us over. What would happen should we get promoted to another step? I don't know. You know, as you go up the leagues, the money demands on the bus travel, on the player budget, so on and so forth, the ground requirements, obviously. I don't know yet. It's. I think we're just about breaking even at the moment, but further down the line, up the pyramid, who knows?
Yeah, because however successful that you get, the limitations on who's going to come through that gate have possibly been reached, especially with the fact that your nearest biggest area is Penzance, and then it's Helston and Falmouth. Well, if you're a football fan in Helston and Falmouth, you're riding the crest of a wave at the moment with your own clubs. So you're never going to get many more into that ground. So it's absolute credit to yourself and the other guys that's working behind the scenes to bring in sponsorship. The club that we're actually both loosely involved in playing in Step 5, and they was taken over at the start of this season, and the owner there, as he is a businessman, and he's gone after the big businesses. That is what you need to sustain. He says, with the best will in the world, £100 from the car repairer or the window cleaner does not run a Step 5, Step 4, Step 3 football club anymore. You've got to be looking at the companies. And this is a changing part of the changing face of amateur football as we know it.
Absolutely. And, you know, we have two or three reasonably sized sponsors. We have a local brewery who are the back of shirt sponsors, and an architect, the front of shirt sponsors, who bring in, you know, a fair amount. But, you know, we all live in the real world, don't we? And petrol and gas and electricity and so on and so forth, skyrocketing. And it's really causing us headaches at the moment to try and fund ourselves, especially with the journeys we have to do every other week.
I think clubs are now, it's actually dawning on clubs that there is a limit to what they can achieve.
Mm-hmm.
And we see them coming back down the pyramid. I wonder if one day you may go back in, even in the pyramid, to, because at the moment, if you finish in one of those positions, the FA say you're going up, full stop, end of conversation. But if you're not capable of going up, or if the financial situation doesn't let you go, you know, it's not going to let you go up and still be there 12 months later. I wonder in the fullness of time if the FA have got to rethink it a little bit.
Mm. I mean, I'm quite new to being involved in non-league football. Big football fan all my life, but not been involved in the running of it. I'm sort of an optimist, a bit of an idealist, and I kind of, at the moment, I still believe that we've done it this far, we can do it again. You know, I don't know what and how yet, but something will come along. We need to make an effort to try and find that thing. But you know, I've got a belief in us. I think we've got a USP down where we are, that we are uniquely placed. We're at the end of the road. We're at the end of the country. We're down a very, very narrow country lane, and you come to this wonderful ground where you get a wonderful welcome. We've got a story to tell about ourselves, which I think is valuable. Now, whether that translates to hard cash, I don't know. But we're on an adventure. We're loving it. You know, as I said before, you know, we were playing Ludgeven and Resudgeon and little teams, little village teams in the neighbourhood just 6 years ago, and now we are getting on the bus for 4 or 5 hours on a Saturday, which is just, you know, it's amazing.
It's a remarkable rise. It probably is one of the biggest fairy tale rises of any football club, quite honestly. You're not at the end of the road, by the way. You're at the beginning of the road, because you get the best first, then it goes downhill from
back to that Western League win last year, a year ago on the 22nd of April last year. We got the cup on the day. They more or less thought we'd win it, although Soltash was still in with a shout. So we got to lift the trophy that day. You look at the names on that trophy, you know, we were the last one, but above us there was Spurs and QPR and Millwall and Portsmouth and teams like that that we were, you know, on the same trophy as. It's just extraordinary.
It's absolutely amazing. Kevin David says he's an optimist. He's fresh into the game, so he's an optimist. I think me and you, who's been in the game for close on 50 years, can be classed as a pessimist, can we?
I am. I think realist is probably more the thing. It's a great adventure you're on. I mean, I know for years, with people turning up at Bashley, were saying, I can't believe it. At the time, Step Three side, and it's a tiny village. You've been there. I've been to Mousel. Mousel's even smaller than Bashley. So the fact that you're competing with the big boys, but it must be a real, sense of achievement. You turn a team over, you go, or you hold them well, you make them welcome, and you think, wow, yeah, you know, here's my little village, but we're up there. And you say some of the teams you are going to meet along this journey have played at a lot higher levels. And, you know, as you say, you've seen the trophy. There's damn great big clubs on there. There are, what you mentioned, Spurs. They want to be one of the big seven. So, you know, you can't get much bigger than that in this country.
Exactly. But they're not, because they bottle it every time. And the other thing, Kevin, he did invite you all to Mousel. Just make sure you're capable of driving the car before you go to Mousel, because it's a more than interesting place to drive through, isn't it, Kevin?
Yeah, I mean, I think I always I smile when I think of the thing that the away team thinks is going to be the worst bit of the journey is that sort of 3 or 4 hours in the bus.
It's not.
No, when they get to Penzance, they've then got to go to a little village that's narrow, narrow country lanes where the wing mirrors are both sides, and then it gets narrower, and then the last approach is the worst bit of all. We need to do something about it. And we've held back doing something about it because we're hoping to build a new road, and we didn't want to spend the money on repairing the existing road if the new road was going to happen. But yeah, it's a pot-old nightmare.
I take it you don't send the coaches through Mousel itself?
No. They wouldn't get through Mousel itself.
No.
You cannot turn. There's one point you cannot turn. So, although the local bus, the little minibus goes back and forth to...
It does. Yeah. It does, and you can see the scrapes in the side of it as well.
Yeah, exactly.
Right.
I was going to say, one of our volunteers came up to me on Tuesday night at the match and said, I'm afraid... I'm not going to be able to come. My husband's going to drive me from now on because I'm not risking my car anymore up that road.
Brilliant. Oh, dear. I wonder if that's on the FA's ground grading, new road. Right. Last week we told you about the FA Cup, and on the instruction of the Big Six, the replays have been scrapped, of which Mr. Pickerel went off the deep end. I'm not as convinced in this because I can see it from the Big Six's point of view. I mean, yes, the FA made a complete pig's ear of it. The fact that they didn't even talk to all their clubs, they just went and did it. And as usual, the FA are in our bad books for doing that. But, David, I put it down for you to read, but it's basically what I think.
Yep. And what he's put is, the outcry against the decision to scrap replays continues, and thoughts are now turning to the logic of having them in the qualifying rounds. Step 4's enthusiasm to stretch from 20 to 22 clubs per division next season, apparently because relegating 4 from 20 is too harsh, should only have ever have been considered on the understanding it would be to have to include the scrapping of FA Cup qualifying replays to free up some midweek capacity.
Now, what this is all about is the FA in their infinite wisdom have decided that there's only been no replays from the first round. Do Step 5 and Step 4 clubs want replays? I'm not so sure. And it's very lucky that we've got a Step 4 guest on tonight, isn't it? Because we can get his opinion, which is much more better than what ours is.
Yeah, you know, I think the idea that you're going to get drawn against a bigger team and... You know, maybe you get them at home in the first round, then you draw and you go away. It's romantic and it's great, and you could make a bit of money out of it. But you still, even with a shared costs, you still got to go somewhere on a Tuesday night, and for a lot of people, that's a journey that they often don't want to have. So I'm not convinced by it as well. I'm not 100% sure. As you say, the FA handled it terribly, but I don't know. I'm not totally convinced. And the other idea behind it as well, I guess, is that with penalties, at least you've got an even 50-50 chance of winning on the day. Whereas if you go to a bigger club away on a Tuesday night, you're not that likely to win.
You see, I think I know they've made a mess of it in more than one way. But once again, they seem to have forgotten about grassroots clubs. I mean, take yourselves. You play at home in the FA Cup against a team from quite conceivably somewhere halfway between Bristol and Birmingham. It ends 1-1 after 90 minutes. 3 days later, you've got to get your players and a coach booked to go 200, 300 miles up country for a game which doesn't really need to take place because it could have been sorted out in one go. Because with the best will in the world, neither of the teams are going to be in it much longer.
All those players work. We had, Bristol on a Tuesday night last season, Bristol Manor Farm. We'd had to leave about 2 in the afternoon, 1 in the afternoon. I got home at 4:15 in the morning. That really impacts on 2 days' work.
Exactly.
Our reserve goalkeeper, who the poor lad didn't even, get a look in, got off the bus, went home for an hour, had a shower, and then went in for a 12-hour shift in a care home where he works. So,
You see, David, this is what I think is more important than what they're bleating on about, and that's no replace for professional footballers or don't do anything else.
Yeah, and I mean, let's be honest, the professional players, they haven't got to go and do 12 hours in a care home, have they? Or run their own brick building, brick laying business or whatever. And quite a few of them are getting probably what these lads are earning in a year in the business. They're probably getting that a week.
Yeah,
So.
I think once again the FA completely ignored people at grassroots. But we get used to that because that's a moan about that every single week. So what changes? Okay, right. From the BBC to Mousel, which is a fairly long journey, and a passion for introducing the next generation into the world of social media. And it must work because David's going to tell you what happened to the last media man we had at Mousel.
Yes, well, a gentleman I've seen many times on your productions is now working for Barcelona. So I wonder in a couple of years' time if he'll see he's gone from a big club to a smaller club, maybe. Yeah, if he's gone to Barcelona,
But
probably not as exotic.
we'll come back to that one that little bit, Kevin, if we can. I want to know a little bit more about Kevin Bishop. The man that was born in Falmouth, went to work to the BBC, went away and come back. So let's have the Kevin Bishop story.
I'm going to let you do one little secret before I start, though. I wasn't actually born here in Falmouth. I was born actually 2 miles away from where we played on Saturday at Bemerton Heath Harlequins in Sarum in Salisbury. But my parents are Cornish through and through. They were in exile at the time, so I came back to Cornwall pretty sharpish. I grew up here. I went to university up in Bradford. I studied Russian and French and went to live in Russia for quite a while in Moscow. And when I was out there, I got a job with NBC News. And then after that, I moved to BBC and spent about 25 years at the BBC, doing a lot of foreign news coverage. But because of my love of football, the foreign news department of the BBC runs the big international tournaments abroad. So I volunteered to go to France 98 and ended up looking after covering the England team camp for about 4 or 5 World Cups in a row. Loved it. But after a while, about 2015, I took redundancy. Came back to Cornwall, started teaching sports journalism at Falmouth University. And my big passion in teaching is I want kids to do it for real. I really believe that the only way you can learn is to actually get out there and do it for you. You can't really learn in the classroom that well anyway. So I got myself a part-time position at Falmouth Rugby Club actually initially, and just brought my students in to help me out with the filming. I wasn't that good a cameraman myself, so I wanted to do quite a bit of filming myself, but I wanted to bring the students along, and it's been great. They've learned how to do the job by getting their hands dirty from get-go. And as you know, in national league football, in in our level of football, you get thrown in the deep end straight away, and you get to do it all. You know, you get to chat to the players, you get to chat to everybody, and students the first week in the work experience are interviewing players, managers, they're filming it all, and it's great experience for them. And
This is what we have to do, isn't it? As a group of people, and I think you're leading the way here. We have to integrate youngsters into the back rooms of our football clubs, because many, many, many grassroots football clubs are run by gentlemen of a certain age. The next generation has got to start getting involved, have got to start coming through, else we're going to lose an awful lot. And social media, well, the word social media seems to be something that's arrived in the last 10, 15 years, in my to me. And you don't have to be a certain age to understand social media. I appreciate that. But it strikes me that the younger you are, the better you are at it. The world revolves around social media now, doesn't it?
And football clubs are at the forefront of doing it as well. I mean, I think sport is one of the really positive ways of using social media. It's got so many negative ways as well, but sport is one of the ways that works really well. And you can give students the only difficulty I think that there is for quite a lot of young people is crossing that threshold at the start. I think quite a lot of people are intimidated by the idea of going out to a football club, finding the right person to speak to, knowing quite what to ask for, and then getting themselves in the door. Once they're there, they tend to thrive. I also do some part-time teaching at Marjon in Plymouth, and a couple of my students there are at Tavistock, and they were one of them was quite a nervous young guy. He wasn't very sort of forthcoming, but I see him now bumping into him most Saturdays at Exeter Services on the away bus route, and he's loving it and he's thriving and he's interviewing the managers, asking tough questions, he's getting all the goals, and it's great to see.
It's fantastic. And I take it at Mazel, then you've got some other students.
Yeah, so you mentioned Pablo. Pablo was one of my students from Falmouth. He'd done a bit of work for Barcelona Fans Channel before he came to us. But he spent 2 years with us and a very, very dedicated young man, really knew his stuff, really prepared well for every match. We used to drive down together and he'd already have in his mind who he's going to talk to, what today's story was, what the narrative of the day was likely to be, who he wanted to interview. And he was always destined for something big, but he got a job with Barcelona's new digital English language platform about a month ago, I suppose, and started straight away. So he's there already. He literally, I think, can't remember which match it was now, but I think the Saturday he was co-commentating for us on Mosel versus Larkhall, I think, and then on the Tuesday he did PSG Barcelona. So it was quite a leap for the
Wow, brilliant.
lad. I've already been replaced him. And this is what I love is a 16-year-old, in fact, not even 16, an under-16s goalkeeper from our squad, and watch what Pablo does. Wrote Pablo the most eloquent text, really well written, which is a struggle these days with young people, I think, asking how would he advise him to get into doing what he did. Pablo put him onto me. I said, well, let's have a go. So I've thrown him in the deep end. He's turned 16 in a couple of months' time. He's not Pablo yet, but he's doing really well. And it's just great to see. It's great to see because having to perform on camera and ask questions right after a football match builds your confidence. It's not easy. It's not easy to go up to a manager who's just been beaten 5-0 and ask them a question. It's when they obviously don't want to be on camera. Players even more so. So yeah, it's great to be able to do it, and I'm hoping to do more of it.
Well, David, bless him, does it for our club. No, and Jürgen Shield. Well, the idea was going to cheer it, but I basically threw him the mic at the start of the season. Says, "Go on, enjoy yourself." And I think David, like Kevin has just said, as the season's gone on, you have started enjoying doing it.
I have. I'm always a bit concerned in the early days, as you say, if the result hasn't gone terribly well. You've got to toe, I don't know, the club's line to a degree. You can't wade straight in and say, well, that was absolutely rubbish or whatever. Why? But at the same time, you can't really be blowing smoke up and saying, well, that was the best performance I've ever seen, despite the 6-0 win, because the supporters aren't going to buy it. And somebody did say to me, one of the supporters, about a few weeks later, why didn't you ask so-and-so? And I just said, well, I'll tell you what, end of next week's game, you come and do it. And they didn't. But no, I mean, particularly at the moment, we've got a manager that always puts himself forward at the end of every game and is very honest about it. We have an assistant manager who came up with the idea, shall we do something before the game? And they always get one of the players to come and speak as well. Not always man of the match, but they revolve it round. You know, so every sort of the players develop in that way. And I have enjoyed it. Sometimes I'm not that well prepared, thinking up the questions, you know, or have I read the game the same way as the person I'm interviewing here? And on the whole, I think I probably have. But I would be open to, you know, if I sort of said, I think this happened this for the manager or the player, so, well, actually, I didn't read the game that way. I'd be quite happy for that discussion. But it is good fun, yeah.
My tip is I always hang around the huddle after the match just to overhear what the manager's saying and to get a sense of what some of the words he's coming out with.
Are they all repeatable?
No, yes.
I must admit, I did enjoy the honesty of the Dorking manager a couple of years ago on live radio. Why is it you've just conceded 8 goals? And I won't use the exact word. Basically, we're not very good at defending. But that wasn't quite how he said it, was it?
Oh, good stuff. And it'll be absolutely applauded because we do need youngsters, we really do. This is Grassroots Plus, and we are proudly sponsored by Gusto Homes. We have been running a little bit of an award season, which comes to its climax next week, and the results are in for the best food served at a non-league ground, the underachievers, and the goal of the season. What we need to know from you this time, it's the big one, really. We want you to nominate, please, the Grassroots Plus Team of the Season. So get voting now. You'll have to put a lot of votes in to beat Lizard Argyle, but beans as Dave won't let me choose the winner, there'll be no bias going into it.
Well, the winner will be done on the amount of nominations, actually, because it's a bit like the goal of the season. I've only seen two of the nominations in the flesh, so to speak, so it's very difficult for me to pick out. So they've been picked on. Nominate along with the underachievers on the amount of nominations teams have got. So yeah, get your Grassroots Plus Team of the Season nomination in.
How many times can I nominate?
I will recognise your email address.
Right, question three for Kevin. And this is a bit going over old ground because we've already discussed it with the nearest club to him at the moment. 90 miles away. Okay, if they don't go up, Helston's going to be closer, but we'll see. The difficulties for a club that's so far detached from the rest of the football world at that level must be absolutely enormous.
Yeah, I mean, you've already mentioned some of the factors from your player recruitment, although you said, I think you're about to tell us, most of the guys that play for you are local within the county. The cost and time of travel involved for players to and from games, to and from training, to attracting supporters. The supporters have got the same thing. The balance might change a bit. If you're getting Helston and possibly Falmouth being promoted, maybe more players will consider coming west anyway because they've got three good sides to go to. Who knows? You might find that all the good players are suddenly more under demand. That's the other thing, of course, isn't it? A lot of players aren't quite as loyal as the support maybe, and they are quite happy to keep changing.
The question that intrigues me most, Kevin, and we'll start off here. Is it almost easier to gather the players together for an away match than it is for an home match?
Certain extent, yes, I guess, because they get on a bus and the bus takes them there, and there's no need to arrange the car shares and that sort of stuff. But I'd say what I would really sort of point out and really has struck me over the months and years I've been there now is the dedication of these players. Like we train twice a week, once in Penzance on a Tuesday night and in Penryn on a Thursday night. Often in Penryn, training starts at 8 o'clock at night. One of our lads, Talon Mitchell, number 10, he lives in Ivybridge, which is the other side of Plymouth. That's 2 hours drive for an 8 o'clock start on a Thursday night. 2 hours training, 2 hours back, twice a week, then a match. That's the dedication of that every week. It just blows my mind that, you know, they're a very cohesive group of young lads. They're very easy in each other's company. And that, I think, is part of the attraction. They like being together. And I think you have to. If you're going to be on a bus for 4 or 5 hours every other Saturday, you know, you've got to get on with each other. And the bus journeys, for me, obviously, I get asked every way match we go to, the first question you get asked is, what time do you get up? And, you know, how long was the journey? For us, I think it's not a big negative for us. I think they bond a lot in the bus. I think they get to know each other more in the bus. And I think we get a chance to kind of relax a bit more than we would do. Some teams who just come together every Saturday and don't see each other week to week, I think, suffer a bit in that way.
That's actually an excellent point. The fact that you are together for so long makes it... You always have a bonding session every second Saturday.
You do have a bonding session. And, you know, there's not many of them put their headphones on and sit and look out the window. Most of them are playing poker or chatting on, you know, laughing around as they do.
What's the longest journey for you, then?
I think by distance, I think it's Malvern, which we did twice, of course, because we got them in the cup. And then the trophy. Luckily, we drew there on the Saturday, so they had to come to West on the Tuesday. I think the longest by time, I think, might have been Bashley, actually.
Bashley, you're not Mr. Pickerel.
Well, once you get off the M5, it's pretty much all A roads, isn't it? That's the problem.
Okay. Evesham, possibly, as well. Four and a half, 5 hours, I think, was to get to Evesham. Building in an hour stop at Exeter.
The Cornish winter, as Phil Hiscock was explaining to us, has not helped an awful lot this winter. In fact, it's been, to put it bluntly, bloody horrendous. How have Mazel coped?
We've had to cancel about 5 games, and Tavistock I think they've come down twice. We've cancelled Tavistock twice, once only an hour before kickoff, which, you know, it was totally out of our hands, but it was a really unfortunate event. So we struggled because of it, obviously, because I don't think a lot of people outside of football or the fans really or sort of it strikes home that, you know, if a match is cancelled on a Saturday and rescheduled for a Tuesday, your income is halved, or even it's a third of what you would get on a Saturday. You don't get the crowds, you don't get the bar sales, you don't get enough people there. So yeah, we've struggled because of it. We've also, additionally, not just the matches, we're also going through the ground grading process at the moment from step 5 to step 4. And we have still got a toilet block and our new stand sitting in what used to be mud about 10 metres away from where they need to be, because we couldn't get the equipment onto the ground to actually move them into place onto the pads we'd built. I mean, luckily, the Football Foundation have passed us, and we're going to put them back in place on Wednesday next week.
And do I assume then that the FA and the Southern League and whoever it is these days are being sensible about all this, because you have gone past the date?
Yeah, I mean, 31st of March was the date. They came and inspected us 2 weeks later, and, you know, we couldn't hide it. The stand wasn't there in place, but, you know, they could see how much we had done, and literally those 10 metres were because of the bogs. And yeah, they were. I think pragmatic is the better word to use. They seem to have taken a much more sensible approach to reality, really. And you can't avoid the fact it's been one of the worst winters in West Cornwall for years. And
it's been. I think you've only had 5 games called off. You've done very well. The pitch obviously takes the water. Then
it's what we're lucky. Although we get a lot of rain, what we are very lucky with, it's very windy up there, and so when the wind comes through, a lot of the surface water gets burned off very quickly, and it can drain quite quickly. But yeah, we have had some rain.
I can vouch for the fact that it gets windy. Right, part two of Dave's roundup, and this time he concentrates on step 6.
Newark Town host Dunkirk on Saturday, while Harrowby United will be travelling to Clipston in the UCL playoffs. While at the other end of the table, Selston and Renneth will stay up as Asfordby are relegated after one season in the pyramid. Ollerton Town finished their stint in the pyramid with a three-figure crowd and a smile on the faces as they bowed out of the Northern Counties East League with just 4 points and 206 goals conceded. We hope that the FA are proud of themselves. At the other end of the scramble for promotion, it's finally sorted that Parkgate should be crowned champions, leaving Beverley, Shirebrook, Wakefield and Retford United to fight it off in the playoffs. Many pundits thought the FA would end up with extra promotions to build up the numbers in Step 5, but as the playoffs are running later than they would like to have happened, thoughts are now turning to reprieving four of the Step 5's bottom clubs. Points per game would suggest that six clubs are in contention, including Pinchbeck, Maltby Main and Skelmersdale.
I think the truth on that bottom little paragraph, David, is that nobody's got any idea of what's going to happen. But the playoffs should have all been done and dusted by this weekend. The majority of them haven't even started. So what are the FA going to do on that one? Because the playoffs are going to be done before any decision's made. So obviously the champions will go up and the team that wins the playoffs will go up. Are they going to then go back and say, oh, by the way, if you finish third in the table, you can go up, even though you got knocked out in the first round of the playoffs? Or even though you lost the playoff final, you can go up? Or are they going to leave Step 5 short on numbers for the second season running, which is what I think they'll do? Or are they going to do what they said they'll never do, and that's relieve teams that finish bottom of the table? I think it's got to be one of the last two, David. Leave Step 5 short or reprieve. So I can't see what you can do with the Step 6 teams that are still playing football.
No, I mean, the one constant thing that's always happened in constitutions over many seasons is there wouldn't be reprieve for the bottom side. But what else can they do? We know that probably with the exception of the odd team, that's come straight up and hasn't done anything with the ground. We know most of the bottom clubs are going to have grounds that have passed ground grading. There's also a rumour doing the rounds that teams, as you say, that finish in the playoff final, regardless of whether they win it or not, might go up. It's whichever way it, whatever the outcome is, whatever they decide to do, it's once again, it's going to be another can of worms that's opened, and there are going to be people that it's going to upset, it's going to annoy, and you know, the question is going to be is, why wasn't all this laid out again at the beginning of the season? Why wasn't it made obvious? If you finish bottom, that's it. You're not coming up. Or if you, you know, if people don't finish in time, they're not coming up. I don't know. You shouldn't penalise clubs because they haven't finished playing the competitions yet, because the weather's beyond everybody's control.
Yeah, but why can't they come out and say something so we all know, we can all stop this silly guessing game? Right, another question for our guests, and anybody that knows me knows that football is secondary to my first passion. So we'll ask the question to see where we go. The village of Marsel suffered the worst lifeboat disaster in the RNLI's 200-year history. Your club, Kevin, has close ties with that organisation, but generalising, how important is it for a, we'll call them grassroots football club, to be part of the community?
I think it's really important, and I think it plays into something that I believe really strongly, and that is that I don't think it should matter where you're born or where you grow up. I think you should be able to aspire to play football at the highest possible level wherever you are in Britain, and just because you are in the far west of Cornwall doesn't mean you shouldn't have access to that. And I think that the club being part of the community, the youth teams, the women's team, the development team, helped that to happen. And I don't think that, you know, we should forget the fact that we are still part of a very important community. And you mentioned the Penley lifeboat, and it still, you know, resonates throughout the club. You know, one of our players went down with the boat, and one of our chief volunteers lost one of his best friends in it. So it is a real part of the community. It's a challenge as well, though. You know, it's the higher you go through the pyramid, the risk is you start to go away from your roots, because you have demands on pulls that financially and where you're playing. You know, we don't play the local teams anymore. So, you know, the visiting teams are unknown to the local people. So it's a challenge to sort of preserve that uniqueness about where we are and the community we're in, while still aspiring to play football at a higher level. So it's not all straightforward. But yeah, we're I think we should do better. I think we should spend more time strengthening our links with the local community. I think we mustn't forget where we're from.
And that is the potentially the problem, as you quite rightly said, the further you go up this pyramid, the less of the local side that would be easy to cut off from. I know that you have almost a lifeboat day when the guys come and back to the club that we're involved in. We have numerous special events. I do think it's so important, and it's important. Marzell's going to be no different to any other club, Kevin, in the fact that even though, you know, you're on step four, banging on step three's doorstep, I would suggest that core of supporters that come to your home matches, some of them are of an age where it's the one thing that they look forward to. It's an afternoon with the friends, it's a chance for a drink, it's a chance to watch a game of football. But more often than not, it puts them back into a group of people.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess, you know, coming from a small village as well, it's a group of people that are often watching people whose dads they know or who used to teach them or whatever, and know the players on the pitch, where the further you go up the pyramid, the likelihood is that the players playing for you don't have a lot of connection with the local village. So it changes, the dynamic of the change and the support changes very much.
They don't, but I've noticed that the players at our level seem to bond easier with the supporters and,
oh yeah,
you know, have a drink with them after the game, talk to them, be there with them, thank them for coming and watching. And even though you do live in Ivorybridge, suddenly you're one of the Marzell group.
Absolutely. Yeah, and that link between the supporters and the players is fantastic to see, and it is part of the joy of football at this level, isn't it? The fact that you can know what the player does for a living, and you know, and know that that's his girlfriend over there, and what his dog's called, and so on and so forth, and that, you know, and have a drink with them in the bar afterwards, and talk over the match. It's part of the joy of this level.
And I think, David, I can almost put you in that bracket, because that's what you enjoy, isn't it? The camaraderie of it all.
It is. I noticed, I said this a few weeks ago to somebody, and I was looking around at an away game, and not only are there the diehard supporters that will be there, rain or shine, particularly in the last couple of seasons, a lot of our players' family come as well. So mum and dad will be at most games. In some case, granddad and grandma are there, or big brother or big sister or little sister even. And they all say hello to each other. You have a chat with some, you have more of a chat with others, but it's like an extended family on a Saturday or a Tuesday night, whether you're home or away. It's almost, you know, you go and you meet the people that are involved with the club. So yeah, it is. And for a lot of people, I know the older generation love it because it's an excuse to go out the house. It's something they like doing. They're meeting people of not just their own age, but they're meeting people of lots, you know, different ages, and they can. Some of the younger supporters love hearing about the fact that you just mentioned, oh, I remember coming 30 years ago, my headmaster played for the team and he scored in a cup final and the woodwork teacher was in goal and things like that. You know, it's sort of, it's the history as well, isn't it, that behind the club, and the fact that they are approachable, the fact that you can turn up on a match day for some of the kids and you can walk out with the team. And the players come and shake your hand afterwards. It's not sort of, oh, well, if you want to be a mascot on match day, that's going to cost you 50 quid or whatever. Or if you want to meet the players, you've got to really ingratiate yourself with the sort of sponsors and you know, pay £100 for match day experience or whatever.
One of the most enjoyable things I did this season is I printed out an old-fashioned autograph card with all the players' pictures on it. And it was just fantastic for the first few games of the season to see the kids just lining up to get players to sign, and the players loved it as well.
That's brilliant. That is absolutely brilliant.
You've just given me an idea.
Oh, here we go.
Right. I confess the idea came from Bridgewater. I do the same thing, so I copied them, but it's a great idea.
That's what good ideas are for, copying.
Yeah, exactly.
That's what they're for. Right, the feeder leads make up the last section of Dave's roundup, and David, he'll give you the heads up. After you talked about the Lincolnshire League, I'm going to jump in.
Yes, no problems. Well, I did actually look at what the bit you're going to get into, so I can probably add to what you may or may not say. Starting in the Lincolnshire Football League on Saturday, and it was a remarkable victory for Crowe Colts. 26-0 winners against Grimsby United. Appleby Frodingham remain on course for the pyramid after they demolished Skegness Reserves 8-2. Normally, that would be a tremendous result, but the 26-0 kind of fades it a bit.
I wonder what's behind all that. We need to find out when we have your friend and my Davey. Friend, Davey, he's, back
I think
on
he's,
again.
I think he's keeping his head down this
Don't
week.
Don't think he'll come on this week, no. Right, Wednesday night's 6-1 thumping victory over closest rivals Woolerton means that the Not Senior League Championship and Pyramid Football are almost certainly heading for Stapleford Town. Realistically, they need a single point, but the goal difference and being as they're not playing in the Lincolnshire League is well enough to already put them into step six football.
That's right. That's what I was going to say. It's a bit like Pinchbeck and Hucknall. Regardless of whatever Pinchbeck did, they've still got to score 45 more goals. And I think we're looking about 26 at this one.
It's not going to happen, is it?
No. In the Central Midlands Alliance, Dernan District require 4 points from two matches to win the North title, while in the South, it's a simple equation for Pinkston. Win your remaining matches and you're champions.
And I think all us local football lovers would like to see Pinkston come up. We loved it when Clay Cross come up after all their years of trying. And if Pinkston joined them, then it would almost complete the set for supporters of a certain age.
Yeah, Pinkston have always been one of those constants, haven't they? You go back 20 years ago, Pinkston were always competing in the local leagues and stuff. And yeah, it'd be good to see them get up there. And it's another local derby, probably for the Northern Counties East League, maybe, or possibly even the UCL.
Who knows? Right, something we love to do is reminisce. You know what we like. It probably comes with age, I don't know. So we always give the guests an opportunity to reminisce in something that we call your most memorable footballing day out.
Yeah, I think we're possibly going to know where you're going to go with this one, Kevin. However, you've travelled the world, so what is your most memorable football day out?
Yes, I mean, I was there. I'm a QPR fan as well as a Mousewolf fan, and I was there for the that end of season Man City match, and that one.
Oh, wow!
That was an interesting day because I began it expecting to go with a friend of mine who I got to Euston Station and he just wasn't answering his phone. Turns out his wife had gone into labour and he wasn't answering the phone because of that. So I got on the train and got up there and I just remember being in the stand at the Etihad and of course everyone there was desperately trying to work out amongst the QPR fans, not really what's going on the pitch, but what was happening I think at Bolton, where Bolton's result was basically we had to beat Bolton's result or they had to not win and they didn't. And I had one of those moments in football when everyone was doing this, you mentioned social media before, everyone was on their social media trying to get the scores from Bolton and it was the one guy with the radio in the middle of the crowd who knew exactly what was happening at the time because that was live. You knew the rest of you didn't know for sure. So yeah, that's probably my most memorable day. I mean, my craziest one, I guess, was as a QPR fan, I once flew back from Eastern Ukraine where I was working from Donetsk actually from Moscow to Cardiff for the playoff final when we lost to Cardiff 1-0 and had to fly back the next morning back to Moscow. So I was basically in Britain for about 36 hours, which involved drive down the M4 to Cardiff to get beaten 1-0 to go back down the M4 again into Moscow. But with Mousel, the best away day, I don't know. I think it was probably in some ways Westbury this season, which was our first season in the Southern League. And it was just that realisation we were suddenly in the Southern League and just feeling so good about it. And passing Stonehenge on the way to a match, which for me as a kid was like so far away and we were going past it on our first away match of the season. Just felt, yeah, we're in the big boys now.
Two things from all that. I know what Brian Clough and Bill Shankly would say. What's it got to do with the husband if the wife's gone in labour and there's a football match to go to? But priorities have changed these days, haven't they? For some. And you've said about going past Stonehenge, it was the realisation that you was in in-step football. Taking it back, if you like, to some of the previous questions, what's been the most noticeable aspect about being in step four football that's different to step five, apart from the obvious, the fact you spend half your life on a coach? But how is the standard so much better? Is the catering so much better? What is the difference that you've noticed?
I'd say the standard is definitely better. It's not a huge leap, and you know we seem to have coped reasonably well with it. You know we're knocking the door off the playoffs at the moment. The catering is very hit and miss, but it was definitely more miss in the Western League than it is in the Southern League. I think it's the more that you're starting to see clubs that have definitely taken that next step. Wimborne come to mind when you just see the facilities they've got there and you realise actually you're now on the fringes of the teams that have actually made that big leap. Melvin as well, you know, the facilities there, the changing rooms, the catering facilities, the, you know, the setup there it's so much better than some of the. So what comes next is in sight already, I guess, in step four, whereas it wasn't so much in step five.
And what do Marzell feed the opposition?
So we have various catering options. We do well. I mean, I love the food, especially Duke Street Cafe are one of our sponsors. And when they are doing the catering on a match day, it's fantastic. They do these wonderful curries. But it's a bit of a cliche, but it's often a pasty. If it's an evening match, it's definitely a pasty from Lavender's down the road.
Excellent.
Oh, lovely. Yeah. And that's really the only thing we sell at the ground, actually, is pasties and sausage rolls.
What else is there? It's pretty cool. You eat a pasty.
Exactly. So, yeah, it's either a pasty or a chili, but we do well with the food. Yeah. Nicola, who does most of the cooking when Duke Street aren't doing it, fantastic cook. Lasagna, pasta bake, that sort of stuff, and it's lovely. We like to give the teams who've gone on that long journey and then down that very bumpy road a bit of a nice welcome. And we don't want anyone to leave West Cornwall thinking that it wasn't a journey worth making.
David, you're itching to say something. I know you are.
No, you mentioned Wimborne. I've not been to the New Cuthbury. The old one was quite tremendous because there was a right slope from left to right on the pitch, and you could actually see on the stand if you stood at one end you were level with the corner flag. If you stood at the other end, I think you're about 8.5 feet above the pitch. But
someone told me that when I was there, actually.
Yeah, the welcome at Cuthbury, it has always been good. Wimborne are a club that fly quite high at times, and they've been through hard times, but and they've got quite a partisan crowd during the game, but they're really friendly as soon as the final whistle stops or before the game.
And they've got someone who sings Cornish sea shanties in the clubhouse after the match as well.
Oh, right.
I think it was.
Get better!
I'm almost certain it was Wimborne. I might stand corrected on that, but I'm not certain it was Wimborne.
Oh, I'm in dream world now. RNLI, Cornish sea shanties. Oh, not bothered about football anymore. Right, we better get back to.
We'll have a whip round here, Mick, to get you down to Cornwall. Don't worry. If you stay there.
Don't worry, you know where I'm heading sooner or later this year. Yes. Right, news time, starting totally locally.
The UCL League Cup final has been thrown into chaos with Saffron Dynamo being kicked out of the competition after playing an ineligible player in the quarterfinal match against Wellingborough. Ashby Ivanhoe and the Doughboys have been brought back off holiday for a hastily rearranged semi-final this Saturday. Non-league maps and projections legend Pete Miller has been proven once again, with Newark and Sheffield United finally confirming they'll be playing at Harrowby next season. The Dickings Road playing area is a major upgrade on Station Road, and that should suit the Highwaymen's style of football much better. Sherwood Colliery's captain, Job Shaw, is leaving the newly promoted club as he's unable to commit to the extra travelling time required for the Northern Premier League. A well-known figure will be missing from the UCL next season after announcing his retirement. Boston Town's captain, Lee Beeson, signed for the club in 2019 and has played 175 matches for the Poachers, scoring 27 goals in the process.
And we'll keep going around the country.
After 26 years of tenancy, Isthmian League side Cray Wanderers have played their last game at Bromley's Hayes Lane ground. They will finally have a home to call their own next season, the Flamingo Park Stadium in Sidcup. Gateshead have been barred from taking part in the National League playoffs after failing to meet the entry criteria for membership of the English Football League. The club have failed to secure a 10-year security of tenure at the International Stadium. They've played there since the 1971-1972 season.
Gateshead, in a nutshell, the Gateshead Council want to outreach all their leisure facilities. In other words, get them off the books and let somebody else run them. They're quite happy for Gateshead Football Club to remain in the International Stadium, and they'll sign it off for 10 years, but they want a get-out clause so they could re-sign a contract if Gateshead Council sell their leisure facilities. And because of this get-out clause in a 10-year lease, the EFL have said no. I think it's pathetic.
It is. I mean, this is a former league club at that, isn't it, as well, or in an incantation. Sport for all, but not if we've got to commit to anything, I guess.
Yeah, I just think it's just beyond belief. Right, below the pyramid before I start chuntering too much.
Nothing like a good chunter, eh, Mick? No. We were wondering last week if we'd found the last club to withdraw from a league this season. And surprise, surprise, we have not, with West Yorkshire League club Centralians packing up. Apparently, they are one of Leeds' oldest clubs, and less than 4 years ago, they were running no less than four teams. That was quickly followed then by Matlock, who withdrew from the Hope Valley League. Spilsby have started their projected clean sweep of the Boston League trophies with a 3-1 victory over Wibberton Reserves in the McCartney Food Service Fishtoff Cup Final. You picked that one purely for the competition name, I'm sure.
It's got to be worth it for the name, hasn't it? It really has. That's what sponsorship does for you, I suppose. And that, folks, is it for a penultimate week. That's a big word. It means next week's the last one.
Well, thank you for educating us on that, Rick, or could so stating the bleeding obvious. Kevin, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on this evening. This is something we've tried to set up some time ago. You've been really, really busy and stuff. Was delighted when you dropped the email in the other day and said, yeah, I'm definitely up for that. Big game for you at the weekend.
Big game for us at the weekend. I've just been looking. Tavistock are 1-0 down against Bristol Meadow Farm, so it's going to be all to play for on Saturday, I think.
You'll enjoy that, I'm sure.
People say, well, I mean, the wife still says it after 50 years. Did you enjoy the game? I take it you're not going to enjoy Saturday, are you? At least until 10 to 5.
Not at all, no. Because I'm filming the game, I've got to concentrate so much on what I do through the camera lens that I am at slightly distance from all the ins and outs of everything that's going on. But even so, still no, I won't enjoy it at all.
Football's not about enjoyment when you're involved in it. It really is. Kevin, David says, thank you so much. I've been witchering on at him for months to get somebody on from Basel, and he's finally...
really enjoyed it.
He's finally contacted you, and now we've got you. You do realise there is no escape.
No worries at all. No worries at all. Happy to come back.
From my point of view, as you know, my Cornish allegiance, the very, very best of luck on Saturday. David, I'll leave the last word to you.
Yes, well, next week it's Max from Emma's Ground Guide. I think we've been told Emma's washing her hair. So he'll be helping us basically have a look at the season that's gone by. Don't forget to get your award nominations in, and we'll see everybody next week.
Good night.
Good night from me. I wonder if, Kevin, can you do it in Cornish?
No, I can say good morning, which is mitten da, but I'm not quite sure how to say goodbye.
No, good morning is good enough.
Brilliant.